It's election season. To help voters learn about candidates, KWBU has partnered with the Waco chapter of the League of Women Voters to present candidate forums for key local and regional races. Today we present the Democratic candidates for U.S. House of Representatives, District 17. This forum was recorded at KWBU on January 27th.
Hello, and welcome to a debate with some of the Democratic candidates running for U.S. House of Representatives, District 17. The Republican candidates will participate in their own debate. This debate is sponsored by the League of Women Voters, Waco, and KWBU. My name is Melissa Mullins, and I am a member of the League of Women Voters, and I will be moderating today. Joe Riley from KWBU will be helping keep time. The League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan organization, encourages informed and active participation of all citizens in government and influences public policy through education and advocacy. The League does not support or oppose any political party or candidate. No portion of this debate may be used as part of campaign materials. Candidates may say that they participated in the debate and link to the recording on the KWBU website. Also referred to as a congressman or congresswoman, each representative is elected to a 2-year term serving the people of a specific congressional district. Among other duties, representatives introduce bills and resolutions, offer amendments, and serve on committees. In doing so, they study bills' effects and costs. They vote based on the bill's merits and the views of voters in their home district. Today, we have with us all three candidates running in this race: William Foster III, David Anthony Jaramillo, and Rick Kennedy. We are excited to have them with us today. The format for the debate is as follows. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to give an introduction. The order of the candidates was determined randomly. There will then be 6 rounds of questioning. During each round, each candidate has 1 minute to respond to the question. We will rotate the order of responses. Finally, each candidate will have 1 minute for closing remarks. They will speak in reverse order of the introductions. Let's begin with introductions. The order determined by a draw will be Rick Kennedy, then William Foster III, and then David Anthony Jaramillo. You have 2 minutes each. Mr. Kennedy?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Melissa. Thank you for hosting. I'd like to thank the Waco League of Women Voters for staging this event. My name is Rick Kennedy, and I was the Democratic nominee for this seat in 2018. I'm running now for the same reasons I ran then. My partner Sarah and I have 5 teenagers between us. And I'm deeply concerned that rather than building a stronger and more prosperous nation, we're about to hand down a divided and diminished America to our kids. Now, I've crisscrossed the district for over 2.5 years now, and I've talked to people in every corner of Central Texas. And we have real kitchen table issues with healthcare, jobs, and infrastructure that we need to solve. And Congress has not risen to the task. Admittedly, it's been a tough couple of decades for the U.S. We started with 9/11, and we've been at war ever since. We had the Great Recession, which devastated millions, many of whom still haven't fully recovered. We've had rapidly changing immigration challenges, and the costs of health care, housing, and education have far outstripped raises in working and middle-class wages. And again, Congress has done nothing through most of this except become more divided and more dysfunctional. Now, I've been an engineer for over 35 years, and I've led teams all over the world solving problems. And I'm open to ideas from across the political spectrum, as long as they're based in fact, as long as they address the issue at hand, and as long as they don't violate our core democratic principles. My name is Rick Kennedy. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to taking your questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kennedy. Mr. Foster?
Thank you all for having us here today. My name is William Foster III. I am from Hearne, Texas. I have a graduate degree from Prairie View A&M University in math and physics. And I, too, had an opportunity to run for this same area in 1998, and it was District 5. I am, first of all, a person that believes in health care. I believe in job creation. I've been a teacher for over 30 years at each level, which was junior high, senior high, college, community college, and at Prairie View A&M University, my alma mater. I believe that I am the right person for the jobs because I believe my ideas are futuristic and have a vision to help primarily the elderly people with their health care. It's a major issue in this country. I don't believe that we should have to reinvent the wheel to provide the necessary health care for people that are in need of it. I often speak about when Bill Clinton left office, that he had a found speech in the hangar that described that people that were born that day would be able to live because of our technology and our medicine for at least 125 years. And I've seen opportunities for that to happen. And we want to provide for those people that are going to be aging out. And I ask for your vote in electing me for U.S. Congress District 17. I'm William Foster III. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Foster. Mr. Jaramillo?
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for having us. My name is David Anthony Jaramillo, and I'm running for U.S. House Representatives for District 17. I'm a Marine Corps veteran and an Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran. While serving, I was awarded a top-secret Yankee White clearance and a Presidential Service Badge. I'm running to advocate for health care for all and prison and immigration reform. I see the need for someone to run in our district that represents everybody. Thank you.
Thank you so much for those introductions. We're now going to move on to the first round of questioning. And the first question is going to go first to Mr. Foster, and then Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Jaramillo. So the first question is, what are the most important duties of a U.S. representative? Mr. Foster?
The duties would be for us to, first of all, pay attention to what is needed in the district and to the constituents that we are representing. The federal government should take care of its citizens, and we need to be able to reach across the aisle when it comes to taking care of our citizens. Once I win this office, it's just not me taking care of Democrats. I also have to respond to the needs of Republicans. So at that time, it becomes a family. And I intend to do the best I can as your representative to make sure that all people are taken care of properly and have the quality of life, the prosperity, and the liberty that they deserve.
Mr. Kennedy, same question.
So I'll echo something that William said. Of course, the primary job of a representative in Congress is to represent the interests of our constituents, of course, in the context of both the overall interests of the country and the Constitution. The basic duties are, as you described in the opening, to file legislation, to co-sponsor legislation, to escort legislation through the through the legislative process, to result in laws that will hopefully make lives of Central Texans better. In addition to that, a major responsibility of a representative in Congress is to provide constituent services to the folks in the district, to help folks who need help negotiating the federal bureaucracy so that they can get to their services, they can access the services they need from the federal government. And finally, I think communication is extremely important. A representative has to come back to the district and clearly communicate what's happening in Washington, D.C. to the folks here at home.
Thank you. Mr. Jaramillo, same question.
Yes, I want to reiterate what everybody has said already. One of the biggest important duties of a representative is to represent the people, because we are elected by the people and for the people. We need to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. We need to have checks and balances for the federal government. We pass laws to help the American people, whether that be for health care or for infrastructure. We are there for the people. Each district in the United States is different. Each district has their own needs. So what we need to do is we listen to the people, have an open door policy. That way we can know specifically what they need. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we're going to move on to round two. And our second question is, what will you do to support a vibrant economy in our area? And we're going to go to Mr. Jaramillo first with that question.
One of the biggest things for a vibrant economy is it's little things here and there that add up to huge things. We need health care. That way people can be healthy enough to actually work and not have to spend their money on the millions and millions of dollars that are being paid out to insurance companies. With that being said, we need to open up more rural clinics. We need to expand programs the federal government has that exists right now, things such as broadband for rural areas. That way they can get the education. That way they can be competitive in the job market. Right now we don't have that in places like Mart, Mahia, Groesbeck. That's what we need. With that education in place, they'll be able to get jobs. Some kids might be want to be doctors and open up that clinic in the rural area. But without that education, that's not going to happen. Right now, we need to invest in the people of our district. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Foster, what will you do to support a vibrant economy in our area?
I am very interested in technology. You'll hear me saying a lot about technology when I'm talking, meeting with people, because technology is the futuristic job creating tool that we will have. I believe that right now we have farmers in this area who've lost their farms, they have been unemployed, and with technology we can do something about that. A lot of people that have farms now that utilize hundreds of acres, it is the possibility that we could use 1 acre versus 100 acres and grow as much as they are growing on that 100 acres. So that technology is available right now. It's called vertical farming and aquaponic farming. So I would take money that we're sending to other countries and utilize it for our people. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kennedy, same question.
Yeah, the 17th District is a microcosm of the nation at this point. We have the three larger counties, McLennan County, Brazos County and Travis County are participating in the economic growth that we're seeing in the rest of the country, while the more rural counties are lagging further behind. Any of the big three counties, their growth is obvious. And in the smaller counties, if you drive through downtown Rockdale or Teague or a place like Mart, you're seeing boarded up storefronts and empty storefronts. So one of the primary need we have to get businesses to locate to these areas is to make these towns livable and desirable. So you have to have healthcare, access to healthcare. Unfortunately, we're in the middle of a rural healthcare crisis in the district. You have to have a good education system. And you have to have 21st century infrastructure to attract 21st century jobs. So universal high-speed internet access, for instance, would be critical to making these towns a good place for factories of the 21st century to locate.
Thank you so much. So the next question, and it goes to you first, Mr. Kennedy, is what measures do you support to address our nation's security?
So that's a very big topic to cover in a minute. One of the things that we do very well as a nation is one of the clauses in the preamble of the Constitution, which is to provide for the common defense. We invest heavily in our defense, and we all benefit heavily from it. Of course, a lot of the focus at this point is on the southern border and securing the southern border. And I'd like to expand on that a little bit because it's not only important to secure the southern border, but it's important to secure all of our borders and all of our ports of entry so that we know who's coming into the country, what their purposes are, and so that we can interdict illegal activities such as human trafficking, and drug trafficking. Do I believe that a wall on the southern border will be an effective solution to that problem? No. I think a wall is appropriate in areas of high urban-to-urban contact, but we need to secure the border with the best technologies available and boots on the ground where it is necessary.
Thank you. That question goes to Mr. Jaramillo next.
With our southern border, like Mr. Kennedy said, we don't need an open border, but we need to invest in 21st century technology. We need to have things such as aerial drones and cameras. With that being said, we need to stimulate the economy, not just for a short period of time with contracts, but with federal workers for a long period of time to open up things such as retirement. We need to open up things for IT personnel to come in for those security cameras. We need to stop the cartels from coming in. We need to stop human trafficking. What we need to do is not invest billions of dollars in the wall, but invest money into the security of the United States with these workers. Thank you.
Thank you. Now to you, Mr. Foster, with that same question.
I believe that right now we have the strongest military and tools to make this country more secure than any country in the world. With the technology that we have right now, we can certainly utilize protecting our borders in an easier manner than what we are doing at this present time. I remember when I was in school and I thought I saw a spaceship. What I saw flying over the airports that had the radars to try to detect actually was the stealth bomber and the stealth F-16. We had not heard of that until we got into the Iraq war. And then it became prevalent that this nation is the strongest in the world, and what we need to do is use our technology to improve upon that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So our next question is, what should the federal government do, if anything, to provide an equitable, quality public education for all children, pre-K through grade 12? And that question is going to go to you first, Mr. Foster.
Being an educator most of my life, I've seen it from kindergarten through four-year institutions. I believe that what we need to do is a little more research into our curriculums. Things have changed. Again, I refer to technology. There are ways that we can help our young people, especially the pre-K through 12, to understand. A lot of people are visual learners, and they're not just book learners. And I think that we use this technology to allow these young people to visualize as though they do on these games that they play all the time that was created. They would do better in the curriculums that we present them. STEM is one piece of education that I think everyone in pre-K through college should look at. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jaramillo, that question to you next.
What we need to do for our public education system is we need to invest more into it. So I graduated from Mart High School, and with our computers we had, it was very limited. We had some, but not for a majority of us. And they were older. So we need to invest more money into the technology to give these kids a brighter future. We need to invest money into more teachers. We can allocate funds from other programs to allow for these struggling schools to bring down the teacher-student ratio. We need to allow for everyone to go to pre-K. That way they can get the baseline foundation of learning. What we need to do is invest in our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, I believe firmly that we have a national interest in providing an education to every child in this country, and they're both a national economic and security interest. 90% of our kids go through public schools. Therefore, it's vital to our future to have a robust public school system. There's a lot of talk at the presidential level about concepts like free college for all and things like that. I prefer to look at the front end of the educational system. We don't all go to college, but we all go to first grade. So if I was going to invest, I'm going to invest heavily in universal pre-K to lift these kids up, to get them leveled off, and get them a good start when they enter first grade, and make sure that every kid who enters first grade has got the tools that they need to be successful through the rest of the educational process.
Thank you so much. So our fifth question is, please explain why you do or do not think it is important to reduce the role of money in American elections. And this question is going to Mr. Jaramillo first.
We need to limit the amount of money that's invested into the election. Because right now we have people in Congress that are career politicians that are making millions of dollars when they came in there with little. Right now, we have politicians that are being bought and sold. Now, my campaign is all about grassroots, because that way I can go up there and say, I wasn't bought by a certain company. I wasn't bought by certain individuals. When we eliminate the big money going into the elections, we are able to now focus on the people of all of our districts and the United States. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, it's critically important to change the role of big money in our democracy, in our electoral cycle. Especially since Citizens United, it is entirely legal in this country to buy political influence through big money advertising, through super PACs. We need to restrict the role of money, because what it's doing is skewing the political power towards into the hands of a small few. A good example of this is universal background checks for weapon sales. 90% of Americans support universal background checks for weapon sales, and 84% of NRA members support universal background checks. And yet, it's still not a law, because Congress, as David said, is bought and sold and serving the special interests, not the interests of the people.
Thank you so much. Mr. Foster?
I believe that we, as a group of people that are running for offices in this country, should have an equal amount of funding and put this on a fair playing field. I think that probably if we did that, and it's going to have to be done by the people, because those who are in Congress are not going to let it happen, because they're getting that PAC money and other big corporation money to fund their ideas that really are not their ideas, but those ideas of the corporations that they are particularly represent. So if we allow each person to have an equal share to go out into the fields and campaign, then I think that would be a fair way to have good people coming in and running for these offices with very futuristic ideas. Thank you.
Thank you. And our final question is, what, if any, specific steps will you take to address inequalities facing women in the United States? And that question is going to come to Mr. Kennedy first.
So, first of all, I would support the Equal Rights Amendment, and I'm sure that's going to wind up in the courts fairly soon. I would support enforcement of the Equal Pay Act, which has never been fully enforced since it was enacted. And I would support raising the federal minimum wage, perhaps not to a straight $15 minimum wage, but to a living minimum wage. Much of the pay inequity that we see between the genders occurs at the lower end of the economic spectrum. And raising that minimum wage would do quite a bit to remove that pay inequity at bottom end of the income spectrum.
Thank you. Mr. Foster, you're next.
In order to be fair, we can just take a look at, and I'm not trying to down men, I'm a man myself, but we get things all screwed up. And women have to come behind us and clean it up and do the right thing to make things as we thought we could make them as men. But they're not paid enough, and they're not paid fair wages. I think that they should get the same thing if they're in a job doing the same kind of work as that man that's doing that work. And there's a lot of women who are single parents, and they are struggling. They got to raise the kid and pay for the house and pay for the car, et cetera, et cetera. And they should be able to have the same rights to these funds as the men have. And I would do everything in my power to make sure that that happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jaramillo.
Yes, I support women's rights. I support equal pay. Now, things such as, for example, my daughter, I tell her what she does is just as important, if not more, than a boy her age. And this can continue on. What we need to do is we need to stop the government from limiting women's rights, whether it be health care or whether it be them fighting against the pay raises. Because when we start limiting somebody, when will it stop? Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for answering our questions. We will now move on to 1 minute closing statements in the reverse order of the introductions. So, Mr. Jaramillo, you will go first for closing.
Thank you all again for having me. As your representative, I will fight for your health care, immigration and prison reform, and VA health care and benefits reform. I want our district to be the leader in these issues and unite for equality and unity within issues such as LGBTQ rights, with women's rights. I am proud to be a resident of our district in the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Foster.
Thank you all for having me here today and the other candidates as well. I believe we have some of the same ideas. I would fight for the rights of all people, regardless to religion, regardless to color, regardless to their gender or age. People are human. They should have the same rights for quality life, their liberties, and their prosperity. So if I'm elected to this office, it will be a battle that I will give in Washington to make sure all of the constituents of this district become a model so that their rights will be able to shine beyond any district in this country. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Yes, and thank you for having us. As I said in my opening remarks, the last two decades have been pretty tough for America, and Congress has not risen to the challenge, only becoming more divided and dysfunctional. As your congressman, my priority will be to steer the dialogue away from the divisiveness and focus on smart solutions to keep our economy growing and allow more people to participate in that growth, to extend health care to all Americans, and to give our rural communities the 21st century infrastructure they need to attract 21st century jobs. It's time for a change. It's time to replace fear with hope, anger with optimism, partisanship with principled compromise, and gridlock with progress on all of these issues and more. It's time for us to take our government back and restore our voice in Washington, D.C. My name is Rick Kennedy. It would be an honor and a privilege to serve as your next congressman. And I pledge to you that as your representatives, my loyalty will lie with the country, the Constitution, and you, my constituents, not PACs, parties, or presidents. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of the League of Women Voters and KWBU, thank you to the candidates for your participation. And thank you to our audience for listening to our debate with these three candidates running in the March 2020 Democratic primary for U.S. House of Representatives, District 17. Please tune in also for the debates with candidates running in the Republican primary for U.S. House of Representatives, District 17, District Judge 19, McLennan County Commissioner 1, and McLennan County Commissioner 3. Thank you for helping make democracy work.
This forum was recorded at KWBU on January 27th.